radioactivity to me then would be just another aspect, another form of the one energy of the universe, and I frankly expect to get high on it should it ever come around. Some of the dreams of people in Sedona. You know, Sedona is a very interesting community. It's unlike any community I've ever experienced in the world. Everybody in Sedona is psychic, telepathic, metaphysical healer. There isn't a such thing as a private thought in Sedona. Forget it. Your thoughts, where you're at, what you're going through, the lessons that you're learning are known by everyone. We all pitch together, you know. And out of the inner plane, we constantly support each other. We all know what lessons we're all struggling with. And everyone in town knows it. And everyone is sending you all the support in the world to make that next leap in consciousness that you're working on. Very unusual community. And it seems to attract people of that type. New people. I just met some new people last week. And she said, guess what I do? I said, I don't need to guess what you do. I already know what you do. I already saw a week in advance that she was coming. Ah, yes. Strange community. So anyway, these ailments began to disappear one by one. The allergies disappeared. The diverticulitis took a little longer, maybe a year. I kept canceling the idea that diverticulitis, you see, is a belief system. All these things are belief systems. We're heavily programmed by the television and the media to believe in them. The medical profession, of course, I used to program people into believing these things. And in so doing, I programmed myself into believing these things, of course. Overcoming these belief systems sometimes takes some conscious effort. You ask for a miracle, you cancel it, you can picture it as something on the blackboard, you can write whatever ailment you've got on the blackboard in your mind and erase it. You ask for a miracle, and of course in the meantime, you're busy with the work of forgiveness and your willingness, working on your willingness to forgive. Because the unconscious guilt, of course, is what brings the illness, what makes it manifest. The form of the illness is some chance remark, usually. Of course, fever runs in our family. And of course, asthma runs in our family. We're all allergic. We Williamses are all allergic, you know. To a three-year-old, that is already a program. So all he has to do is hear it once. Everybody in our family is allergic. Being a good kid, he cooperates. He immediately becomes allergic. So he's one of the family. You think he wants to feel separated, the only kid without allergies in the family? Allergies are very programmable. In fact, I've never seen an allergy that wasn't just a program. There isn't such thing as an allergy that can't be eliminated by the Course in Miracles. All the allergies disappeared. The diverticulitis disappeared. The ulcer disappeared. The hyperacidity disappeared. Let's see, I forgot the whole part of the gastrointestinal tract, didn't I? Well, that's an indelicate part. There was indelicate problems also, going down the GI tract, one end to the other. In fact, these indelicate problems were scheduled for surgery. And due to taking the course and eliminating these things, those structural changes, which are supposedly only cured by surgery, also cured themselves. So going from one end of the gastrointestinal system to the other, everything cured. Of course, I also had the belief system that smoking gives you smoker's cough, right? Watch your T-zone and all this. One day I was coughing as usual from cigarettes, and suddenly it hit me. I suddenly saw the advertisement with your T-zone and cougher's bronchitis and cougher's, what is it all you're supposed to get? So I had my choice, either give up smoking or give up the belief system and coughing. And it has a serious effect on your life. So I say, which would I rather do? So I gave up the idea that cigarettes have an injurious effect on your health, and the smoker attack disappeared. So this is the way we let one thing go after another. One day I was in a class, The Course in Miracles, out in Sedona, and I was talking about, you know, getting rid of all these ailments, how the course had eliminated all these ailments, from athlete's foot to dandruff, to the middle age syndrome and all these things, and going down my disease list as usual. And all of a sudden, one lady in the course said, well, if you get rid of all those things, then how come you still wear glasses? So, I never thought of that myself. I never thought of glasses as an ailment or something. I always thought that, you know, it's a structural defect of the body. The eyeball's too long or too short, I forget which. But whatever it is, it's some structural anatomical impairment of the eyeball, the lens, something, I don't know, who cares about it. So anyway, I'd worn glasses my entire life since I was a child. As I said, they were getting stronger, and in middle age, supposedly your eyes get worse, so mine did. I had to get new lenses every 6 months, and as I say, we went from regular glasses to bifocals, and now we were about to hit trifocals. And so, because this lady had said that, I said, well, I never thought of that, to tell you the truth, you know, I never thought of wearing glasses as some kind of an impairment. But in an instant, I suddenly saw it, the whole belief system. So I took my glasses off, and I put them in my pocket, and that was about 1980 or 81, somewhere in there. And I've never put them on since. Well, it was an interesting experience. It was an interesting experience, because I put the glasses away. For some peculiar reason, I never put them on. As I walked out of the class that night, I couldn't see anything. That was the first problem with not wearing glasses, was not being able to see. Between nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism all in one bag, you know. I could barely see my hand in front of my face. But I remember walking out and not being able to see the car. But I remembered where the car was. And by feel, I opened it and got in. And then a peculiar phenomena began to happen. I could see only what I needed to see. I couldn't see what I wanted to see. I could only see what I needed to see, and I could only see it when I needed to see it, not beforehand. I noticed as I got in the car, I could see where to put the key. I noticed that I could see what I needed to see to drive. I could see the curve just when I needed to see the curve, but not any sooner. Now, Sedona's in the mountains, and there's 1,000-foot drop-offs from these switchbacks. So here I'm driving around the mountains, and as I said, I was frightened. I was frightened for 6 weeks. Just to walk around without your glasses alone, if you've never worn glasses, you probably don't know what this is, but you develop an unconscious dependence on these glasses. Just to walk around without your glasses is already frightening. Then you top it off with not being able to see, it comes sort of doubly frightening. And when you're trying to drive on top of it. But I noticed that as I got to the edge of the cliff, for instance, I would see the curb just in time to not go off the cliff. Several times we came very close. A couple times we came within an inch of going off the cliff. But as I say, there's no order of difficulty in miracles. An inch is as good as a mile. To spirit, an inch is a mile. What's the difference? You didn't go off the cliff is all that he was arranging. So I could see what I needed to see. Well, it's interesting. It was a very wonderful experience. I remember flying on a plane. I couldn't read anything. I couldn't read the newspaper. I couldn't read Time magazine. I couldn't even hardly see the picture on Time magazine. And Tuesday night came, it was going to be time for the Course in Miracles, and I thought, how am I going to read the textbook? Well, I went to class, I opened the book, and I could read it as clear as day. And I also, at the time, was reading Ramana Maharshi, who I still read. Ramana Maharshi is very hard to get, and it's printed in India. And the print, you know, things that are printed in India, very often the ink is very light. And it was small print, small light print, and yet I could read Ramana Maharshi with no difficulty. So I could read The Course in Miracles, and I could read Ramana Maharshi, and that was all. I could not read anything else. I couldn't even read a calendar. I found out that about 99% of seeing, looking, is ego. We look out of curiosity. We look for titillation. We look for erotic interest, for aesthetic amusement, for comical relief. We look for 10,000 reasons, all of them ego. Only about 1 second a minute do you ever really need to see anything. Because I could only see very little, I'd say I saw about 4% of what I usually saw. So the fear went on. I can remember one night I'm driving down the highway, and not only couldn't I see through the windshield very far, but it was raining, and it was pitch black, and there's no street lights in Sedona. And I had to turn left at the Unity Church to go to class that night. So I'm going down the highway, and all of a sudden it's raining, and I couldn't see anything. So I had one moment of doubt. Up to this time I only had fear, but no doubt. And in this second I suddenly had doubt. And I said, "Well, God, are you sure about this Lazarus thing?" And just then I got in my mind that it was a lesson in faith and trust. It was a lesson in faith and trust. And no sooner did I get that message than a truck appeared from the other side of the road and his headlights shone on the curb and I could see instantly where to turn left. It was like God just suddenly lit up and said, "Turn this way," and I turned that way, and there I was at Unity Church. So it was just a constant series of miracles in being able to see 3 or 4% of what you ordinarily saw. By the end of 6 weeks, it was all right with me. I said, "Well, God, if I'm only to see 4% of what I used to see, then that's the way it's going to be. I'll just see what I need to see when I need to see it." Which is sort of the way it goes with me with money, too. I get the money I need only when I need it. But not a day in advance. So after 6 weeks of this phenomena, the anxiety suddenly went away. And I just accepted that that was God's will for me, that that would be the way my life would be. And I was perfectly comfortable with it. I stopped resisting it. I surrendered to it. And it was perfectly all right. And as soon as it was perfectly all right, one day I was standing in a friend's home, and suddenly I could see everything perfectly. Everything is perfectly visible. I now have better vision than people who never wore glasses. They ask me what the street sign says up a block ahead. So in that surrender, in that turning over one's will to God's will, the third step, I use the third step very frequently as a form of applying the Course in Miracles. The third step and the Course, of course, are almost the same. But by gradually letting go, and letting go of that much of the ego in that particular area, a true miracle occurred. Now, whether the eyeball has changed or not, I have no idea. I know when I go for my driving test, and they give me the eye test, I pass it. I now have a driver's license that says, I used to have a driver's license that said, "Must wear glasses." Now, my last two driver's licenses don't need glasses. So under objective testing, scientific testing with optical machines, I have perfect vision and three-dimensional depth perception, color, everything is perfect. All the things that have been alleviated myself, I have scientific evidence. I have x-rays of the duodenal ulcer before and after. I have a normal x-ray showing the duodenum with no ulcer. I have certain x-rays of the neck showing the neck before and after. I have my visual ability, which holds up under testing. Before, I couldn't see the optical machine. They'd say, "Come over here, we want to test your eyes." I'd say, "Where?" And so all these things are objectively, scientifically provable. They're all demonstrable, and they're all experiential. Something happens when we take A Course in Miracles that allows these phenomena to go through some kind of a profound change. Some of the changes have required actual alteration in the body's organic structure. First of all these illnesses obviously took a correction in the body structure. And some of them I've shown by x-ray there's been an actual physical change. And how can this be then? How can it be that what you hold in mind can literally change the physical structure of the body? Well, we'll go into that. Before we leave, I want to mention one thing before we leave vision, that one thing I discovered and was revealed to me was that we do not see through the body's eyes in the first place. This is a belief system so heavily believed by everyone, practically everyone on the planet, such a powerfully supported belief system and thought that it becomes practically so, only because so many people believe it, because we all believe it. Literally, however, we see through the mind. It's the mind that sees. It actually bypasses the eyes. And I saw, and I remember also from several other experiences, when I was not in the body, that I saw perfectly. I remember one time about 20 years ago when I was dying of Bill Wilson's disease. Give it a new name, right? I was in a rather severe advanced state, And I was in this hospital given up. I was given up as hopeless by everyone. My case was so bad that my local group suggested I try another group. Which did not indicate too hopeful a prognosis. My psychoanalyst suggested I not drive into the city anymore. And so I was given up as pretty hopeless. But in this, it just happened I was in hell that night. Hell also being a state of consciousness and a belief system. I was in hell for one characteristic of hell, if you've never been there, is that it is timeless. Just as the top state is timeless, the bottom state is also timeless. It went on for eons. There was no hope anywhere, ever, under any circumstances. And the mind was in total black despair. No hope now or ever. That's the message you get in hell. Give up all hope, ye that pass through these gates. It's not just a bit of poetry. One characteristic was that it goes on forever, without end. An infinity of agony and suffering. In that state, all of a sudden, I found myself out of Dave's body, looking down at him in the bed. There I was, about 4 feet over the bed. And I looked at Dave up in the air here, and, he was a perfect replica of this Dave. Body, everything was similar, except it seemed to be of a much higher vibration. It was almost as though you could see through this body, almost like a holographic kind of a body. And I looked down, and there was Dave laying in Dave's body, anyway, laying in his bed. And he was a pretty bad-looking specimen, I'll tell you. He didn't look like he was long for this world. So I looked at this pathetic creature lying in the bed, and I realized that consciousness went with this body that was up here. It wasn't remaining with that body in the bed. That was a spontaneous occurrence. But being out of body, I had no trouble at all seeing. The eyeballs were in the skull, laying in the body in the bed. And I was 4 feet above in another body, another sort of an energy body, which suspended itself effortlessly in space. In those days, I knew nothing about astral projection. I didn't know anything about emotional bodies or etheric bodies or anything. I thought there was just this body that I was in. Of course, since then, I've learned quite a bit different. So this was a spontaneous out-of-body experience, long before I ever read Journeys Out of the Body by Bob Monroe. And there I was, without eyeballs, but perfect vision. Perfect vision. Of course, in dreams, you do the same thing. You go out of body, go tearing around the astral universes, and you don't have any difficulty seeing. And before my vision returned to perfect, one time I was sitting on the patio, and in 1 second, I had perfect vision. It only lasted a second, but in that second, I saw that I was seeing, like, beyond the eyes, beyond the body. And, of course, the same phenomena occurs with hearing. And many psychic phenomena, you see, are really quite understandable once you realize that mind is universal. Mind is everywhere. And the capacities that we associate are capacities of mind. So you can see anywhere in the universe, and you can hear anywhere in the universe. And some people have developed this, and they become clairvoyant. You can project your consciousness anywhere and listen to what's happening or see what's happening. I later learned how to do this at will at the Monroe Institute. And there you learn how to go out of body, and you can go into a closed box, read what's written on the label, come back out and tell people what's in the box, what it says there. Interesting international implications of all this, of course, having to do with psychotronics, and which the Russians are quite advanced on, I understand. But it is quite possible then to project one's consciousness into the content of a box in the back of the room, read what's in there, go back in body and tell you all what's in the box. Why? Because you haven't left your mind in the first place. Mind having no limits, being everywhere all the time, forever and ever. Of course, it's only your own mind that you're looking at in the first place. So when we let go of the limitation that we're a body and that our mind is somewhere in our skull and begin to realize the truth that we are not a body, that we're present everywhere at all times, always were and always will be, as we get in touch with our real self, then all these phenomena, of course, become easily understandable. That's one difficulty we have. We're trained, you see, to believe all these limitations. We have such profound limitations in our belief systems. One effect of the Course, then, is to begin to undo them. And somehow Spirit seems to know what lesson we as an individual particularly need to learn. Because when you think of the number of limitations we have, it's almost endless. The number of limitations are almost endless. What limitations are important for us to learn or to demonstrate to another person? Sometimes the lessons we go through are because of the group of the people that we're living with. Suddenly we undergo a phenomena, and some of the phenomena I've experienced were primarily for the benefit of others around. So, in other words, we don't select which of these phenomena, we don't really select what's going to happen to us. At least my experience, these things all happened spontaneously. They happened in succession and with very little assistance from myself. So I can say then, through the Course in Miracles, in applying the knowledge which comes about as a result, we can let go every single ailment of the human body. We can bring about profound structural changes. Now, one phenomena that cured itself, I used to hate to fly. And I hated to fly because the pressure changes in the cabin, I would get a severe splitting earache in my right ear. I couldn't open my right eustachian tube. And everybody would be holding their nose and blowing and telling me to do that, and I would blow and blow, but the right eustachian tube was blocked. And it was blocked because it was at the wrong angle in the bone. And the muscle that's supposed to open the opening, the eustachian tube inside the inner ear, would not open. So that was a structural anatomical defect. And I began to work on that. I began to tell myself that that was a belief system also, that I have an impaired eustachian tube on the right-hand side and that it's at the wrong angle, etc. Well, that took about 3 years. But beginning about 2 years ago, all of a sudden the right eustachian tube began to function. And now I used to take, you know, anti-allergy pills and sniffers and Sudafed and all kinds of stuff when I flew to try and open the eustachian tube. But now it opens and closes automatically by itself. I don't even have to hold my nose and blow and go through all these contortions. It just spontaneously, automatic, without my thinking about it, adjusts itself to pressure. So how did that happen? That's really weird, you know. The eustachian tube goes right through the temporal bone. I mean, it's solid bone. And here's this little canal. The one eustachian tube's at this angle, and the other eustachian tube was at the wrong angle. So somehow, over a period of 3 years, the angle of the eustachian tube literally changed right through solid temporal bone. How can that be? Your left brain, your intelligent, educated brain says this is impossible. How could a thought change the physical structure of the body? Well, as I said, I discovered that there was a series of bodies. There was this physical body, but then there was an energy body around this physical body. And one can, with some training, and if you happen to be a little adept, some people do it spontaneously, you can actually learn to take these other bodies and leave this physical body, leave it laying in the bed. So I learned that there was a series of bodies, and that the highest frequency one was the mental body or thought body. Of course, the miracles has to do with changing our belief systems, our thought systems. So the thought body, that body within a body, seems to be the most powerful. Probably because the higher the frequency, you know, in physics, the higher the frequency, the more powerful an energy. The lower the frequency, the less power it has. Now, thought, being the finest vibration in the universe, therefore has more power than anything else. So when I change my belief system, when I change my thought, when I say hypoglycemia is a belief system, hypoglycemia is nothing but a concept. It's a thought form. It has no reality other than the reality that I give it. As I begin to cancel that, first of all, the minute I begin to doubt that hypoglycemia is a thing in itself, but more just a thought form, that doubt alone begins to weaken the belief system. To hear a talk like I'm giving you today already is weakening the belief systems that you have in all these things. To merely know that another human being can let it go already opens up to your mind that if he can do it, I can too. His mind is no different. So as we begin to weaken the thought, here's what happens.
The thought body regulates the emotional body. The emotional body regulates the etheric body. And the etheric body is a blueprint for the physical body. Now, here's a very weird concept. Without the etheric body, which is an energy blueprint, which surrounds the physical body and occupies the same space, without that, our body would be like an amoeba. If we didn't have an etheric body, our body would be changing shape all the time. Some of us would be 18 feet long and a foot wide. Some of us would be a foot high and 22 feet in diameter. We would just be all over the place. What keeps this body in shape and place is the etheric body. Now, this sounds bizarre unless you look at advanced physics. When you get to advanced physics, you'll find that advanced physics agrees totally with the Course in Miracles. Advanced physics merely gives you the how. Advanced gives you the Fritzhof Kapper's book on the Tao of physics, the tale of physics. If you're interested in some of the mechanisms of how it can be that a thought can change your physical body, you can look up Fritzhof Kapper's book. Well, if we start with molecular structure, if we start with the atom, we see in the center is the nucleus, and around this nucleus goes an electron. This little electron is infinitely small. And this little electron whirls around at the speed of light. Now, the little electron is not there all the time. One of the peculiarities of the universe is that the electron goes on and off, on and off. So like a little firefly, here's the nucleus. The nucleus, let's say, would be the size of a pinhead. The electron would be going all around the walls of the roof and the floor here, whirling around this empty space at the speed of light. Because it's going at the speed of light, like a fan that's turned on, if you stick your finger in the fan, because of its speed, it seems solid. So the walls here and all seem solid. Why? Because the electrons are flying around here at the speed of light. Actually, what are we standing in? We're standing in empty space. Right. We're all standing here in empty space. And the electrons in our body are going on and off. Now, one peculiarity of physics is when the electron goes on again, if you look to see where the electron is going to come on after it goes off, you say, it's going to go on over there. The minute you look over there and say it's going to go on there, the fact that you're looking there and thinking about where it's going to go on already changes it. It won't go on there. It goes on with great regularity, and you say, it's going to go on there. Your thought that it's going to go on there cancels it from going on there. So it's the principle of uncertainty that you cannot say with any reasonable certainty where the electron will reappear in space and time again. Where do we go the other half of the time, somebody said. We're only here half the time, right? When our electrons are on, where do we go when they're off, right? All right, so what determines then where will this little firefly, where his little light will go on again? Like a firefly, the little electron is tearing around here, and his little light is going on and off. What determines where he will reappear in space? What determines when his little light's going to go back on again? Physicists would blow their mind at this. I hope there's no physicists in the audience. But in our language that we can understand, this is pretty analogous. So the little firefly's light is going to come on somewhere, sometime, and nobody knows exactly where. Well, all right, that's the function of the etheric body. So you might picture the etheric body as almost like a magnetic field that's almost identical to the physical body. Right down in it determines where every little electron is going to go on again. So if in the etheric energy body there's a blueprint of your eustachian tube and you have the belief system that it's displaced, then every time the little electron goes on again, it gets this message and it will go on where your etheric body tells it to go on. All right, so my mental body has told my etheric body, let's say, you're allergic to poison ivy. All right, now my body will do exactly what it's been told. It will do that because the mental body is so powerful. The thought form, the form of this thought is so powerful, it will control now my etheric body, which will control my physical body. Okay, we got that? The thought body is the most powerful energy in the universe. It controls our emotional and our etheric body. The etheric body is the blueprint for the physical body. All right, so the etheric body then tells the electron where to turn on, where to turn off. See? Without this magnetic field then, the molecules and the atoms would turn it on and off as they please. And as I say, you'd become amoeboid. Your shape would be changing. You could never count where your body would be in space. All right, as I cancel this, as I say, you know, this is a belief system, and I don't believe this anymore, and I ask for a miracle, and I allow spirit now to change, what happens is the etheric body blueprint changes. All right, now when the electron goes on, it's going on under the influence of something different than that old belief system. The electron goes on, it goes on a little bit higher, and it comes back a little bit higher, and it goes back. And as that happens trillions and billions of times, that electron going on and off, each time, infinitely, in a small increment in a different position, you see, going on, going off, going on, going off. So you've got the idea now, the body is not solid. The body is space, and it's energy. And energy, in a form understandable to our consciousness, as, let's say, electrons. All right, therefore, it's variable. It's changeable. In other words, the human body is not fixed in its present anatomical position, but is only responding to our belief system. As you change your belief system, then, you're changing the etheric energy pattern, and this then causes the electrons to go on and off in a different position. Where the electron went on before, like this black four here, if I begin to cancel the belief system, the electron will not go back on in that same position. Now, I'm going to go on in a different position. All right, so as time goes by, it took 3 years for the station tube to move, but as time goes by, this change of your thought system will literally change the shape of your body. I saw a funny demonstration of that. Some friends stayed out with me in Sedona, and this lady always wanted to be a ballet dancer. And the reason she couldn't be a professional ballet dancer is that her behind was too wide. This is one of the tragedies of her life. A frustrated ballet dancer, and she said she was bottom half heavy. So she began to release this belief system, saw that this was something her mind was doing to prevent her from experiencing what she wanted to experience through unconscious guilt and all the things we learn about in the Course in Miracles. She began to release on it. She kept releasing on it and kept releasing on it. And instead, she pictured the kind of body she'd like to have. And I'll tell you, when she came out to visit me in Sedona, she had a classical ballet dancer's figure. So from top to bottom, folks, there's nothing that we can't change by paying attention to the concepts of the Course. And what happens is we catch ourselves with these negative thought and belief systems. And as we catch them, we ask for a miracle. We ask to see what they are in truth. I was asked to see the truth. I just say, I would like to see this in truth. And I ask for a miracle. And gradually our thoughts change. Gradually the body changes. And these health problems and illnesses and diseases automatically begin to reverse themselves. May not happen overnight, although I've seen it often happen overnight as well. Due to changes in belief system, I've seen people take their glasses off and have perfect vision in 24 hours. I've seen it happen in an instant. So many people just take their glasses off and say, my God, I can see perfectly. So I've seen it happen in an instant. I guess our readiness, how close we are to that kind of a realization. So many of the ailments I had cured very quickly. Many of my, as I told you, I went to bed, I had the illness, and when I woke up in the morning, I realized the illness was gone. So in one instant of realization, the illness was cured. Others took several years. The diverticulitis took a couple of years. Hyperglycemia really took, I'd say, 6 months or a year. And the vision took 6 weeks. All these things took variable periods of time. So if you're working on a particular thing, don't give up. Just that, you know, somebody asked me this morning, how long should you work on something? I would say just forget about time. Just constantly work on it. It may take 6 months. It may take, who knows, 6 years. It may take a lifetime. What's the difference? Because the lesson is all the same, and I suppose these phenomena cure for reasons that spirit decides. I mean, I suppose that these things happen until you see the truth, until you see the truth about it. After that point, it's really not necessary for them to cure. If I have an ailment now, I don't care about it. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. It can stay there or not stay there. I don't feel the necessity to do anything about it. there was a period of time when I was consciously working on it, and I felt to do something about it. I didn't pick the things, they seemed to come to mind, but I was sort of consciously working on it. Now, when things happen, I don't really care about it one way or the other. Whether it stays or leaves is sort of irrelevant because I don't identify that much with the body. The body is sort of like something else in the room, and it's interesting because the world considers it mine, but I myself am not all that interested in it. And with that sort of a total neglect kind of care that I use now, everything cures itself. I know I don't have to bother with conscious programs. Also, aging, of course, aging and getting older and looking older is a belief system. And I've been giving lectures recently on reversing the whole aging belief system. All the changes that we associate with age, total belief systems. Not a one of them is true. None of them. I have the whole middle-aged male syndrome. You read about it everywhere. You hear about it everywhere. So naturally you get it, right? I mean, I want to be a cooperative member of society. So at age 50, I had it all too. The depression and the male menopausal changes and God was all these things that you believe in. Well, that spontaneously, I never did do anything about that, but that just spontaneously disappeared. And people say I look 5 to 10 years younger. And I'm going on 60, in a couple of years I'll be 60. And so I noticed that the skin and that one's energy, you know, overall available energy, one's libido, one's erotic interest in life, it's more than sex, it's an interest, a pleasurable, joyous interest in all of life, you know, returns automatically of its own without having to do anything consciously about it. So I think that's enough on that subject. We went through physical ailments, emotional ailments such as depression. We went through structural changes such as eustachian tubes and glasses, things that are supposedly anatomical, non-correctable structural changes of the body. So I think we'll stop there. We've talked enough about healing and healing-specific things, and now we have time for questions. Go ahead.
I'm very interested, and it's always difficult for me to share something like this that I'm going to be hearing. I'm very interested in the fact that there is no order of difficulty in miracles, which is a correction of a shift in perception. So therefore, if you have a congenital condition that seemingly, certainly through medical means, is not so-called curable. That is that incredible, because I'm just trying to work with obligation. Because of the business of timelessness and spacelessness, that truly is true, because, you know, I know people who are quadriplegic, and I'm not too concerned with my eye problem on a level by myself. Only how people may perceive that, and I'm going to get past that one too. But it's difficult for me to be where you are in terms of you took glasses off. I don't put glasses on. So I'm not challenging you. I'm just trying to get there. And if you're saying that the inner vision that comes through the way of the Course, that's how I view it, a way of life, is it, then it'll either emerge or not, and it won't really matter. What I'm ultimately trying to say.
That's true. Also, modern science has just found that we do not see or hear the way we've always thought we seen or hear or heard. That there's a whole new system of sound reproduction called holophony. H-O-L-O-P-H-O-N-Y. Holophony or whatever. It's starting first in Europe. I understand 17 corporations now have patents on it. But, you see, the belief system is that vibrations come through the air. These impinge on the membrane in the ear. This stimulates the nerve. And because of the time differential of the sound wave hitting the left ear vis-a-vis the right ear,
We get a spatial effect. So that's what we've all believed. And now it turns out this is not the fact at all. Turns out we don't hear that way at all. Rather, the mind hears more or less holographically. The mind actually produces a reference tone constantly. And it's thought that this may be the so-called ringing in the ears, is an augmented reference tone. The incoming sound signal actually is occurring on a different vibration wave than sound waves, and it interfaces with the reference tone produced by the brain itself. And the hearing effect and the stereo effect is due to the intersection of the incoming energy wave with the constant tone produced by the brain. This interface then creates a stereo sound effect within the brain. So there's a whole new type of sound production coming out in which there's no sound in the room. There's no vibration. So when a bass drum is pounding and you put your hand on something in the room, you feel no vibration at all. In other words, it has nothing to do with sound waves. And the effect in the mind is so realistic that if you hear a footstep, you actually have the perception of a foot walking across, someone walking across the room. So it's going to cause a revolution. Deaf people can hear. Deaf people can hear. Through holophony, deaf people hear as well as people with ears. So you see, now we have a new belief system, right? Science is our great God. So when science says, hey, we don't need ears to hear, we hear with the brain, and we can transmit directly to your brain, you can hear, and all the deaf people will be able to hear. To experience it, the latest album by Pink Floyd has holophonic sound on it. But anyway, it's going to be a whole new industry. It's going to revolutionize. It's a major leap forward and will cause as big a revolution as television did. We can now reproduce almost, you know, one effect of this is synesthesia, where you hear colors and see sound. You know what I mean? We used to work hard in the 60s to produce synesthesia using multimedia, sound and light and strobes and various things, to try and fuse it into one experience where you didn't know whether you were hearing the light or seeing the sound. And LSD created that experience, that's where people first got it in the 60s, that all senses were fused into one experience. You could actually hear the colors. You can actually see the sound. So it sounds like modern science and electronics is going to bring about the same experience. With holophonic sound now, you can literally feel, touch, taste, and experience the physicality of that which is supposedly creating the sound. Isn't it? Yes.